This evening, what we're going to look at is an example of how elders had function in dealing with a problem that had arisen in the church. And for that, we are going to go to Acts chapter 15. So Acts chapter 15 is a very interesting study of solving problems both within and between congregations. And it's worthy of, in itself of a long study. But we are going to go through more briefly to focus on the participation of the elders in this particular case and the congregation as well. What we have to understand in Acts chapter 15 is that members of the congregation in Jerusalem had started to visit other congregations, started traveling into the Gentile regions, and as they are going, they are telling people that it was required of them to have Christians who are Gentiles to be circumcised. Basically, they're saying they had to come underneath the Old Testament covenant in order to be Christians. And in Acts chapter 15, verse 1, it says, "Some men came down from Judea and began teaching the brethren, 'Unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved.'" Now, of course, this would cause quite a bit of problems in the Gentile regions because that was not what the scripture taught. And it says in verse 2, "Then Paul and Barnabas had great dissension and debate with them, and the brethren determined that Paul and Barnabas and some others of them should go up to Jerusalem to the apostles and elders concerning this issue." These men came from Jerusalem, teaching a doctrine which the brethren in Assyria, in Antioch, knew was false. Paul and Barnabas had great debate, but the problem is it's coming out of Jerusalem. And so they sent brethren to find out what's going on, is basically what's happening here. Now, some people look at this as, oh, they had a church council to settle the issue. No, they didn't have a church council to settle the issue. They had a false doctrine being spread by another church, and they went and sent somebody over there to find out what's going on. And so, Paul and Barnabas then go. Now, notice who made the decision to send Paul and Barnabas. It was the brethren at that congregation. And this was done even though in Acts chapter 14, verse 23, if we go back to that one, they had elders there. It says, "When they had appointed elders for them in every church, having prayed and fasted, they commended them to the Lord in whom they had believed." Every church that Paul had been teaching at had elders. That would include Antioch. But it's the brethren who came together and decided they needed to send Paul and Barnabas down to Jerusalem along with some others. Now compare this with the way churches today oftentimes handle problems. Today, in a number of congregations, elders will meet. They perhaps would choose men. They would then announce to who they were to the congregation. These men would then thank the elders for their confidence in them. And they would declare to all that they were sent by the elders. And in the sending and coming and going in the book of Acts, does this sound like anything like what happened here? They were sent by the congregation, by the church. And that's something we got to take note of. Even though the church in Antioch had elders with leadership and oversight, we find that the congregation had a high degree of participation in the work that was going on and the problems that were being addressed. Now, when these brethren arrived to Jerusalem, they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders. So sometimes, you know, somebody will say, well, the elders represent the church. So if the elders send them, then it's the church. But notice how it's worded when we get down to verse 4. "Therefore, being sent on their way by the church, they were passing through Phoenicia and Samaria, describing in detail the conversion of the Gentiles, and were bringing great joy to all brethren. And they arrived at Jerusalem, and they were received by the church and the apostles and the elders, and they reported all that God had done to them. And I want you to understand and note that it wasn't just the apostles. It wasn't just the elders representing the church. They were welcomed by all. And the wording there makes that very, very clear. This is not a private session with the elders. Everyone was there. And in that assembly, we had some disagreement. The Pharisees then insisted that the Gentiles should be told that he needed to be circumcised. Even though I don't have all these verses up here, we're going to continue on in our reading. Now notice that it says in verse 4, they reported all that God had done with them. But some of the sect of the Pharisees who had believed stood up saying, it is necessary to circumcise them and to direct them to observe the law of Moses. In other words, Paul and Barnabas, when they came and announced what was going on in the Gentile regions, were able to pull out and expose the false teachers who objected to what Paul and Barnabas were saying. And so they stood up, made their point clear. And as a result of this, and we got a problem. The church in Jerusalem now is aware of they have a problem. They have people teaching something that is not taught or not agreed by the church in general. How was it handled in this case? Starting with verse 6, it says, the apostles and elders came together to look into this matter. And after there had been much debate, Peter stood up and said to them, brethren, you know that in early days, and it goes on with what Peter talked about, and we could get into that. But I want you to notice there was a subsequent meeting called where the apostles and the ambassadors from Antioch, Paul and Barnabas and the other brethren, and the leaders of the church, the elders, where these troublemakers had come from, gathered together to discuss the matter, now that they're aware of it. Again, though, we should not conclude that it was a closed-door meeting. Jump down to verse 12. All the people kept silent, and they were listening to Paul and Barnabas and Paul as they were relating what signs and wonders God had done through them among the Gentiles. So even though it is basically a meeting of the apostles, the elders, and those who came from Antioch, what we find is the rest of the church is listening in. This is being done in the presence of the rest of the church. And they're hearing the arguments being made one side to the other. They're hearing what is being argued by Peter, and they heard what Paul and Barnabas said. And then as James stood up and made an application from the prophet Amos to show that there was no need for the circumcision of the Gentiles, they all heard that. Brother McGarvey wrote a commentary on Acts, and in that commentary he said, after the Pharisees had stated their position, the assembly adjourned without discussing the question. The second meeting is announced. Neither this nor the first meeting was composed exclusively of the apostles and elders. From verse 22, we learn that the church was now present. That was also verse 12, but look at verse 22. Then it seemed good to the apostles and the elders with the whole church to choose men from among whom they descend to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas, Judas called Barabbas, and Silas, leading men among the brethren. It wasn't just limited to the leaders. Everyone made a decision. How could they make a decision? Well, they heard all the arguments. They heard what was going on and what was being taught. Another commentator says, the consultation of the apostles and the presbyters thus put forward here afresh was not confined to themselves but took place in the presence and with the assistance of the whole church assembled together, as evident from verse 12. A.C. Hervey said a special meeting of the church was called to consider this matter. J. Alexander said all the multitude, the whole mass of those present, implying a much larger number than the apostles and the elders. A. Alford said the delineation of the apostles and elders implied the presence of the brethren also, who are intended by all the multitude. A.T. Robertson, in his commentary, says the church was not named here as in verse 4, but we know from verse 12 and 22 that the whole church came together this time, along with the apostles and the elders. This is not oftentimes where people look at things today. We have this attitude oftentimes. We pick up from our businesses that we run. When there's a problem in a business, what happens? We call the board of directors. And they go off into a closed-door meeting. They make their decisions. They come back and out and announce, okay, here's how we're going to solve the problem. A lot of times we do that with the government. Sometimes people get upset. They say, we don't want a closed-door meeting. We want an open-door meeting. But a lot of times people will gather together separate, make a decision, and then announce it. This is not the way we find the church running in the New Testament. There was a problem in the church. They had members in the church teaching a false doctrine. It was a concern of the church as a whole. And what took place was not a sequestered council of the church hierarchy. It was not a private elders' meeting which deliberated and announced the conclusions to the assembly. The congregation was present, hearing the convincing evidence, and joined in the conclusion and in sending greetings to the Gentile brethren. See, everyone knew what was going on. They understood and agreed to it. And so then a letter was sent. And that those who were bringing the letter were also selected by the congregation, just like Antioch selected brethren to come down, or go over, up actually, technically is uphill, so they went up to Jerusalem. But in Acts chapter 15 again, starting with verse 22, and when it seemed good to the apostles and the elders with the whole church to choose men from among them to send to Antioch with Paul and Barnabas, Judas called Barabbas and Silas, leading men from among the brethren, and they sent this letter by them, the apostles and the brethren, who are elders to the church in Antioch and Syria and Cilicia, who are from the Gentiles, greetings. And so a letter was sent from the leaders in Jerusalem, but this was the men who were picked to go along with what the whole congregation said. This is what we need to do. Notice how the participation of the congregation is reiterated over and over in this chapter. See, the oversight of the church at Jerusalem did not preclude the participation of the church and the members thereof. See, authoritarian leadership is seen as the ideal in denominations. I was talking with a young man just last night. He's caught up in Catholicism. And he disagrees with a lot of things that are going on in Catholicism. But one of the things we were pointing out is, because he was saying, you know, in the Catholic Church, they don't study their Bible that much. He said, and really, they should be going back to the Bible. And I said, yes. They should be going back to the Bible. And we got to talk about why. And I pointed out, well, when people are really familiar with their Bibles, they start to question things. And those who want to direct by authoritarian rule really don't like themselves to be questioned. They don't want things pointed out. And so they find it easier just to encourage people not to study and not to talk and just do what we're said to do. That's not the way Christ designed the church. You know, one would expect elders to confer on matters relating to the flock. You know, it would be poor leadership to go into each assembly without any idea what the flock needs to do. And we would expect that. However, the conversations must not be decrees, saying this, we have decided, therefore you will do. Well, as we pointed out in the earlier lesson, the idea of the rule that was pointed there is rule by encouraging others to come to the same conclusion. It's a rule by persuasion, bringing people to a conclusion. See, elders are not to be self-willed. Go back to Titus chapter 1. Titus chapter 1. And verse 7. For the overseer must be above reproach as God's stewards, not self-willed. And goes on with other qualifications. We're going to go into those qualifications in more detail, Lord willing, our next time that we start lessons, hopefully next week. But one of the qualifications there is to be not self-willed, not self-pleasing, not arrogant. That's what you expect of people who see themselves as servants of the church. It's not just what I want. It's what the Lord demands, and it's what the congregation decides. The elders are there to help direct the congregation, to keep them in line, to make sure they understand what God's word is, and to persuade the group to go and follow after what God says. And elders have to remember they're fallible. See, it's not necessary for them to have their finger on every detail of the work. Determining every detail is not their providence. Their task is to transform ideas into purpose, into action, to work in concert with the brethren, persuading as its leaders. Persuasion necessitates presentation to the persuaded and the participation of the ones being persuaded. See, I can't persuade you if I just tell you, here's what it's going to be. We have to talk about the ideas. We have to talk about why. We have to discuss what your opinions about the ideas and what passages do you know. Men cannot lead under these circumstances. They're not qualified to be elders. Now, it's a tough task that's being called for. It's a whole lot easier, and that's why you find, like I said, a lot of the denomination go for the authoritarian. It's a whole lot easier to just say, here's what we're doing, period. But we're serving one another. And so that means persuading. And it's not a democracy. When we talk about the church, it is not like our country runs. Sometimes we want to model churches after whatever the political system is. If you don't know that, just look at church history. The Catholic Church is laid out just like the Roman Empire. You have the emperor, the pope, the College of Cardinals, the Senate. And you just start laying it down, it's just like it. Some of the denominations that started up in the late Middle Ages are modeled after the type of governments that were popular in Europe. And all the newer denominations, guess what? They're modeled after republics. And they have voting and other things like that. But we're not a democracy. And we should understand a congregation does not function as a pure democracy. In other words, it's not a matter of everyone has an equal vote. Christ established a function by leadership. Take a look at Luke chapter 22. Luke chapter 22 and verse 26. He said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lord it over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But it is not this way among with you. But the one who is greatest among you must become like the youngest, and the leader like the servant. Those who would be called chief are actually, they like to put labels on themselves. They like to be called benefactors. I'm here. We see that in our government all the time. know, if you ever notice the senators and the things, I'm here to serve the country. While they dictate what's going to happen. That's not the way it is in the church. Those who are leading are serving those, their members. Take a look at Matthew chapter 20 and verse 27. Matthew 20 and 27. It says, and whoever wishes to be first among you shall be your slave. Okay. There are people who are first. But they're the ones who serve the rest. And there are leaders. As we already had discussed in length, Hebrews chapter 13. Hebrews chapter 13. And in verse 7, remember those who led you, who spoke the word of God to you, and consider the result of their conduct. Imitate their faith. And jumping down to verse 17, obey your leaders and submit to them, for they will keep watch over your souls as those who would give an account. Let them do this with joy and not with grief, for this would be unprofitable for you. There are leaders in the church. There's a reason why we look for elders. Okay. It's not that everybody has an equal vote. The elder's job is to get the church to work in a unified function. But they're still leading. God does not intend for a minimum knowledge or brash assertiveness to have equal influence with wisdom, proven service, and spiritual maturity. That's what happens in a democracy. See, my vote in a democracy just counts just as much as a college student that just got out of high school. It doesn't matter how much you know or how little you know. That's not a way it works in the church. We ought to give place to those who have, we know, are knowledgeable about the scriptures. We ought to consider those who have served and shown, proven their service. And give weight to and consideration to what they say. Now, while Christ banishes personal authority and dominion, he has ordained leadership by the mature, the exemplary, the spiritually experienced and the knowledgeable. It's the job of the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastors, and the teachers to help the rest gain maturity. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 4, starting with verse 11. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 11. And he gave some as apostles, and some as prophets, and some as evangelists, and some as pastors and teachers, for the equipping of the saints for the work of service, to the building up of the body of Christ, until we all obtain the unity of the faith, and of the knowledge of the Son of God, to a mature man, to the measure of the stature which belongs to the fullness of Christ. As a result, we are to no longer be children tossed here and there by the waves and carried about by every wind of doctrine, by the trickery of men, by craftiness and deceitful scheming. But speaking the truth in love, we are to grow up in all aspects into him who is the head, even Christ, from whom the whole body, being fitted and held together by what every joint supplies, according to the proper working of each individual part, causes the growth of the body for the building up of itself in love. It is the truth, the spiritual wisdom abiding in the elders, that's the reason why we say that they have the leadership. And now this is why one of the qualifications for an elder is that they cannot be a novice. Take a look at 1 Timothy chapter 3. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 6. Among the qualifications is, and not a new convert, so that he will not become conceited and fall into condemnation incurred by the devil. See, one of the problems we have is sometimes we want to follow after the dynamic person. The one that's very persuasive in his talk. And yes, elders are supposed to be persuasive. But we just pick whoever's the most persuasive as the leaders. Well, the problem is they can lead us in the wrong direction. What's more important is their knowledge and their wisdom. That they're able to keep us in line in following what the scriptures teach. This is why those who influence us have to be qualified by character, by their knowledge, by their experience. Because we're basically putting in charge over our congregation men who are, it's going to be a job of persuading us to do what is right. Well, we want people who are already doing what's right to be doing that for us. See, the paradox is that the leadership of God's people is found among those who've been humbled by service. Going again back to Matthew chapter 20. Matthew chapter 20. And verse 27. And whoever wishes to be first among you must also be your slave, just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve and to give his life as a ransom for many. The thing about Christ is an example. Christ came and served. He humbled himself. And yet we all willingly follow him. The one who served us to the point of death. Jesus exemplified it when he washed the disciples' feet. Take a look at Luke chapter 22. Luke 22 and verse 27. Jesus said, "For who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or the one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I'm among you as one who serves." We want leaders who are not authoritarian. We want leaders who serve the congregation. And yet it's a paradox. Because the paradox keeps the domineering from power. Human will and personality will not dominate. Human pride is not empowered. Leaders are established by serving other people. It's leadership without dominion. Being first by service and not by power. It's not the way the world works. And you describe this to the world and they look at you like you're crazy. How do you possibly do that? This is the way Christ wants his church to operate. I'd like to look at one other word we need to examine. And that's the word for oversight. In 1 Peter chapter 5, 1 Peter chapter 5, and in verse 2, 1 Peter chapter 5, excuse me, verse 2, it says, "Shepherd the flock of God among you, exercising oversight, not under compulsion, but voluntarily, according to the will of God, not for sordid gain, but for with eagerness." That word is oversight. Again, my Greek pronunciation is horrible. But it's episkopeio. It's translated exercising oversight, to watch over, to watch out for. The word expresses the careful regard of those who occupy a position of responsibility. It's the same word that's actually used in Hebrews chapter 12. Take a look at that. Hebrews 12 verse 15. Hebrews 12 verse 15, it says, "See to it," and that's the word oversight, that no one comes short of the grace of God, that no root of bitterness springing up causes trouble, and by it many have been defiled. See to it. Watch. This is what the elders do. Exercise oversight in tending, the caring of, and watching over the flock. See, one of the reasons we need elders, especially as we grow in more number, is that there are going to be times that some of us are going to get off the beaten path. Somebody needs to be on watch, helping that person get back into line with what the gospel actually teaches. It doesn't mean rigid control. Now, it's not a matter of saying, well, you believe differently than I do, and either you follow what I say or you're out of here. That's not what's being taught here. Elders are to lead. They activate the group. They see over the assemblies as it works. They give examples. They give counsel. But they don't give directives. See, oversight and dominion are not the same thing. One decides and imposes. That's being an authoritarian. That's giving directives. The other watches over, is persuades. Elders do the latter. They watch people and they persuade them back into the truth. See, it takes really special men to lead in this fashion. But the point is that elders are supposed to be special men. That's why there's qualifications for them. We want somebody that can exercise without becoming domineering. One who can help the congregation grow and mature. Staying on track. That's what it means to rule well. Not that there's never ever a squabble. You got people. If you want an illustration of that, all you have to do is look at anybody's household with their little kids. There's going to be squabbles. But the husband who exercises and rules well his household is not that there's never going to be a squabble, but he knows how to get it settled. How to get those involved in it to come to terms of peace. And how to go in the right direction to what is best for everyone. Following after the Lord. Elders exercise that same type of control. It's a control by persuasion. And it's like I said, it takes talent. It's difficult. It's not easy to do. But we need people like that. We need people who are willing to serve the church. Not to run it. Not in that sense, but to serve it. As soon as we start talking about elders running a congregation, we got the wrong idea already. We're talking about people who will serve the church, helping it grow. Hope you'll think about these things. We got lots more to talk about. We still haven't talked about the qualifications yet. But I'd like to lay out at least the foundations of it so that we know what we're looking at and why they're there. If there's anyone here, though, tonight who's not yet a child of God, there's no better time than right now to put on Christ. And for those of you who are children of God and would like the prayers of the brethren on your behalf, why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.